thank you
Love
for Spotlight.
Radio.
Welcome to Spotlight for Justice. We are happy that you've joined us today. We had a bit of difficulty earlier, and we've figured out some of the kinks. And we are so happy today to welcome the wonderful and amazing Lisa Guerrero. She is a reporter for Inside Edition and has written a new book called Warrior. And we are so happy to have you with us today, Lisa. Thank you.
Hi, Dr. Kathy. How are you? And good to connect with you finally. And hi, Michelle, as well. I know that you are on the line.
Thank you. Thank you for being patient with us. We appreciate that. I was able to read your book Saturday night. I got started on it, and I'm sure you've heard this before, and couldn't put it down. So I read the entire thing in one setting, and I am so happy you're here to talk about it and to share with us and our listeners some of the things that are in your book. So I'm going to start off with, would you please tell everybody where the title Warrior came from?
So my book is called Warrior, My Path to Being Brave. And the reason why I titled the book Warrior is that my name, Guerrero, my last name, means warrior in Spanish. And when I was 8 years old, my mother was diagnosed with lymphoma. And she actually, before she passed away, she was 29. Before she passed away, she said to me, Lisita, never forget that Guerrero is your last name, and Guerrero means warrior. You were born to fight. But at 8 years old, I had no idea what that meant, and I didn't know what it meant to be courageous or to be brave or to be a warrior. And it took me decades before finally, as an investigative reporter, 50 years later, I finally understand what bravery means and what being a warrior is. It's not only my name, it's also my heritage. And so I decided to call my book Warrior to let other people know that they too can fight for justice and to demand accountability from others.
That is awesome. I love the fact that your mom reminded you that within your name and within your family system, that to be strong and to be courageous didn't mean you knew it at the time, but it was something that
right.
you would grow up with. And my mother used to say to me, Kathy, remember, you come from a long line of strong and courageous women. And so
exactly.
when I was reading that, that resonated with me as well, because, you know, as a little girl, we need to have women before us set the tone for what it means, and not only to say it, but to show it. And I'm sure as I was reading your book, your mom showed you, you know, different situations where she demonstrated for you and modeled for you what that meant. And I, the one story that I'm thinking of in particular is the one where you said, I believe that you were at the grocery store and a woman turned around and said
yeah.
to her, why don't you go back, right, to Mexico?
Well,
and your mom said,
yeah.
I'm not from Mexico, I'm from Chile, right? So
right. Yeah,
watching your mother, you know, did you sort of get an idea at that point in time, wow, my mother is stronger than she was, and look at her?
Yes. I mean, I think every kid believes their mom is strong and beautiful and great. Obviously, the mother is the center of your universe for most kids. And so when I saw my mother stand up to the woman in the pier, we were in a pier one, she was trying to return something, and she had a thick Hispanic accent because my mother is from Chile. And the woman behind us was a white woman who was very upset with my mother and said, why don't you just go back to Mexico? And of course, my mother whipped around and said, you know, I'm not from Mexico, I'm from Chile. That's a different continent you ignorant woman. And she drags me out of the pier one. And I just remember being very proud of my mother. I didn't really understand racism or I didn't understand why the other woman was so upset at my mother, but I certainly understood my mother's reaction and the sense that my mother was being brave and standing up to somebody who was, you know, being toxic to her, negative to her. And I felt somehow she was protecting me. And, you know, years later, of course, we would call the woman behind us a Karen. this woman was an original Karen. And, you know, unfortunately, there are a lot of people out there like that. And my book tries to describe how everybody can stand up to bullies and push back against negativity and learn how to see red flags, how to develop boundaries, how to push back and fight back against injustice and wrongdoing. And I think we need to start modeling that for kids very, very early.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. And one of the I got when I was reading your book was the fact that everybody gets bullied at some point in time, unless you're the bully.
Right.
And yeah. And so your book was really helpful and insightful, as you just said, in what you can do about somebody who bullies you. And so I know in the work that I do with some of my clients, you know, they have children who are bullied at school and want to know, you know, what to do about that. And I have adults who are bullied by other adults. And so I want to go back to your book, and you talked about being called a Q-tip. Could you talk about that?
So when I was a kid, of course, I grew up without a mother. Having lost my mother at 8, my dad raised me, and nobody taught me how to do my hair and makeup and how to dress. I was very awkward and shy and very skinny and tall, and I chopped my own hair off at home. You know, I didn't know to go to a beauty salon or to have somebody braid my or style my hair. So I literally looked like a Q-tip. I had frizzy, short hair and this long, skinny body, and I was teased in junior high and high school about how I looked. And it wasn't until years later when I kind of grew out of that and was discovered as a model and became an actress and kind of launched my career. But I'll never forget the pain of being an outsider and of eating lunch by myself and of being not a popular girl in a school full of beach blonde beauties. I grew up in San Diego and Huntington Beach. I tried out for cheerleading and didn't make it. And it was just, you know, it was a tough time for me. I had my nose in a book constantly, and I had dreams of either being a professional athlete because my dad loved sports and taught me sports, or of being a writer. And I couldn't even imagine a life on camera or chasing bad guys. That was so far from who I thought I was at the time, which is why I'm convinced that we can all learn to be more brave and can be more courageous and tap into our inner superheroes that we all have inside of us. But back then, I didn't recognize that. I didn't see it yet.
And I love the fact you just said something that resonates with me, that we can all be superheroes, whatever that is to us, and overcome some of our fears and work, you know, through our fears, past our fears, and we don't let fear stop us. So with that being said, I want to go back to the story of your first superhero finding a bad guy. So can you share that story and that experience with our listeners?
Are you talking about when I was a kid? This one is
now where that woman came to you and said, nobody's helping me.
Yeah, okay, so that wasn't my first. That was the first one I write about in my book. But after I had been an investigative reporter for Inside Edition for several years, I got a Facebook message from a woman named Monica Hall, who was the aunt of a little girl named Juliette Gertz, who had been beaten to death in her crib in a home in Nebraska, a small town named Gearing. And the local cops and the local sheriff had bungled the case. Clearly, this girl, you know, had been killed and her death was ruled a homicide. Three adults were in the home at that time, but none of them were arrested. All of them were able to kind of, you know, collaborate with their stories, and all three had been able to leave the state in the weeks and months after the murder. So 4 years go by, and Monica, the little girl's aunt, was so frustrated with this now cold case that she contacted me on Facebook and asked me to look into the case and said she wanted justice for Juliette. And I was able to talk my senior investigative producer into letting me bring my crew to Nebraska to interview Monica Hall and to ask some tough questions of that sheriff and the DA to try to find out what had happened. And I was told that, you know, the suspects were long gone. They didn't know where the suspects were anymore. And they were sorry, but it was, you know, they kind of washed their hands of it. My crew and I, within weeks, were able to track down all three of the suspects in different states. And two of the suspects, including the little girl's mother, turned over on the third suspect, Dustin Chauncey, who was the little girl's mother's boyfriend. And they both admitted on camera to me that they thought Dustin Chauncey had beaten Juliet to death. And because of that story and because Monica Hall had been collecting signatures, they in Gearing, Nebraska, finally called a grand jury. And I was in the courtroom 2 years later when Dustin Chauncey was finally found guilty, and he is now serving 80 years to life in prison, partly because of that investigation that we did. And altogether, we covered that story for several years until we saw him walking away to prison in handcuffs, where he is today.
Dr. Kathy?
Yes.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Can Lisa hear me?
I hear you, Michelle.
Oh, hey, my friend. Hi, my friend. Technical difficulties. You know, we do have a shoestring budget here at NW Cave. Thank you for being
Hello,
on the show and being so, cooperative with the situation. But that segues right into my main question. As a journalist, you know, I've been on both sides of the microphone also. How do reporters fight the good fight, continue to carry on with stories like with Juliet's story, et cetera, and you see the injustices happening? Because we are in the beginning stages of our case of Misha and Layla. We had a vigil yesterday for, and hundreds of people came out, and we too have an injustice going on at the hands of our courthouse. How do reporters and journalists have to stay neutral in a time when you all really want to report the facts of the injustices happening?
Well, every reporter, you know, has a different job. So I think a lot of times people paint the media all with one broad brush. We all have different types of stories that we cover and different ways we cover them. So if you are a print journalist, you have a lot more time and space to report on a document-driven story, which means courthouse documents, testimony, photographs, depositions. You can do long-form reporting day after day if you work for a newspaper locally. If you are like me and you work for a national TV show, I have an investigative unit that gets to do stories all over the country, but we only have 3 minutes to report an investigation on Inside Edition. So our stories must be video-driven. We must have typically a victim or a parent or a family member of a victim, a legal expert, and then hopefully an opportunity for me to chase a bad guy or for me to ask tough questions of somebody who's been accused of a crime or who's scamming people or a politician, et cetera. And then we put that all into a three-minute piece, which sounds really short, but 3 minutes is about the attention span, mm-hmm. now of TV viewers for one specific TV news report. So we all have different types of jobs. We do them differently. And, you know, I think the biggest hurdle for most crime or justice reporters is, first of all, getting the tips to be able to report on the stories, to know that an injustice has been done, know that a crime or a scam is happening. So we really rely on our readers or our viewers to send us tips for stories to look for. And then depending on, you know, what the outlet is we work for, we can pitch those stories to our editors or producers. And typically it's an editor or producer that greenlights a story so that we can cover it. Essentially, I'm saying this is a group or a team job. So one reporter doesn't cover a story beginning to end just on their own and publish just right. on their own, unless they're writing their own blog or, you know, they have a website or something. But for mainstream right. journalists, we rely on people to give us tips. And then, you know, we have to do the hard work of doing the research and tracking down the, you know, either, you know, victims' families, experts, law enforcement, people that will talk, that have, you know, witnesses, family members, et cetera, and start to construct a story. And, you know, I think you mentioned, Michelle, you know, how do you stay neutral? I don't stay neutral. I don't really believe in being neutral. I believe in telling the truth. And I believe that when you tell the truth and you see that there are people committing horrific crimes against women and children and victims and the elderly and animals, then you're not neutral. You take a position. And the position is, I want there to be accountability for this crime. I want people to know about it, and I want, you know, I want the wheels of justice to begin to turn so that this person can be delivered to justice, whatever that means for that particular crime or scam. So I don't try, you know, I hate this notion of both sides reporting. You know, there's a school shooting today in Nashville, and
yeah,
you know, there's going to be some people, yeah, it's terrible, but there's going to be some reporters that are going to say, well, you know, both sides can't agree on, you know, how to reduce gun violence, which is a bunch of bull pucky. No, one side is saying we need to ban assault weapons. The other side is taking money from the NRA and ignores babies getting shot in schools on a daily basis. So I think reporters and the media need to change their strategy. And instead of trying to not piss one side off, instead try reporting the truth. And I'll get off my podium now, and I will stop preaching at this point.
That's why we love
you,
Lisa.
But that's how I feel.
And that's perfectly right. It's being a warrior that, you know, you're being brave enough to speak out. And you're speaking on facts and not opinions. I mean, these opinions sometimes with justice, especially when we're spotlighting it, like on this show, we're calling out people. We want them to be held accountable. We're not talking about our opinions on gun control. We're talking about our opinion on why people are released on bail when they shot at somebody and tried to kill them, only to be
right.
let out and then a few days later grab a mother and a daughter and kill them both after we had every opportunity to hold them. And so we need
right.
laws to be passed and everything. And I commend reporters, and I did that yesterday. But I also found myself at 9 o'clock last night calling a network
here in our local area, instead of calling out somebody that they keep interviewing, we called the network and said, listen, you know, we're not mad at the cops. You know, opinions are opinions, but if they're not speaking on behalf of our client and the family, then ultimately, why do you keep interviewing them? Because we're not in the practice of trying to cause harm or cause violence, especially to police officers. And so, you know, we, instead of going to the individual, we went around the individual right to the reporter, and they pulled it for 11 o'clock. So, you know, that's, you know us, and I'm preaching to the choir, but media matters. And you and I have known each other over a decade, and we've had you on our previous show, Voices for Justice, where some of your cases that you, as you say, stilettos, going after the bad guy, actually resulted not only in awards and things for Inside Edition and your team, but also prosecutions. That media is what matters. So I want to tell folks, if you did get our link that we've posted, Lisa will take your calls. So the call-in number is 515-602-9601. Feel free and call in with any questions that you may have. And again, we apologize for the earlier technical difficulties, but Lisa's here. She's a warrior. And I know that Kathy has some other questions in regards to this fabulous came out with. And again, we all do what we do because we have a story. And part of your story, Lisa, you think you know somebody after 10 years until you read their book. And then you find out, you know, some heartbreaking details like having a miscarriage and then being forced to go back to work. You know, can you talk a little bit about that for our listeners? Because, again, nobody would have asked a male colleague to do that if they had had a situation in their life. And that's a major trauma. And yet you were forced to have to get back on the sidelines, pardon the pun, and do the job.
Actually, I wasn't forced. Here's what had happened. I was working for Monday Night Football. I was, to back up, I had been a sportscaster for over a decade, starting in Los Angeles and then regionally and nationally at Fox Sports Net. And I finally got the very coveted position of sideline reporter on ABC's Monday Night Football in 2003. But I was immediately under fire from the sports media critics who didn't think that I deserved the job because at one point I had been an NFL cheerleader years before and I had been a model and an actress. And I was basically slut-shamed for being a what they considered a pretty face in the world of sports. Basically ignoring the 10 years of really hard work I had done as a sportscaster in Los Angeles and scoring huge interviews with Barry Bonds, Shaquille O'Neal, Kobe Bryant, Alex Rodriguez, and being, you know, an anchor and a host in an all-male environment. And finally, I get Monday Night Football. I'm under this intense scrutiny. Sports columns are written about my fingernail polish, my lip gloss, the size of my breasts, the length of my hair before I ever covered a game for Monday Night Football. So finally, I begin my season. I flubbed a question at the end of the first regular season game, which was basically like handing my critics on a silver platter, you know, my career, because they took it from there and ran and they said, there, see, she made a mistake. She doesn't know what she's talking about. She's an idiot. And the rest of the season was brutal for me because that, in addition to the fact that I had a male executive producer who was extremely verbally abusive to me, made my life miserable that season. So here I am getting slut-shamed in the media, getting harassed on the job while I'm reporting in front of 40 million people every Monday night. And I lost weight. I was sick all the time. I was depressed. I was under a great deal of pressure, anxiety. I couldn't eat. I lost a lot of weight. I was throwing up before and after games. Finally, late in the season, I had just gotten engaged. Late in the season, during one of my last games, I started to feel cramps. I started to have a headache and feel nauseous. And at halftime, I went into the officials' bathroom, which is right next to the tunnel on the field, and I realized I was having a miscarriage. But instead of calling my producer on the walkie-talkie and saying, you've got to call 911, I need an ambulance, I need to get to the hospital, I was so afraid of him, and I was afraid of being fired, and I was afraid of looking not tough enough if I would have gone to the hospital and people knew that I had had a miscarriage, that I went back onto the field in the second half, plastered a smile on my face, and continued reporting. And finally, that game ended. I got onto the plane, went to the bathroom, took off my bloody clothes, threw them in the trash can, and I realized that I had lost everything in that job, my dignity, my health, my mental health, and finally a pregnancy. And that's when I realized that I needed to tap into my inner warrior and become the brave person that my mother wanted me to be, and to push back at the bullies and the toxic, you know, boss that I had, and that I had to start to fight for myself. And so the reason I write about that in my book is that I know 1 in 4 pregnancies ends in miscarriage. I want women to know that they're not alone. Many women experience miscarriages at work, but they feel ashamed to talk about it, or they feel like a failure because they had a miscarriage. So one of the purposes of my book, Warrior, My Path to Being Brave, is to be able to bravely speak about the toxicity that we feel at work, and to be able to have open conversations about mental health and the challenges women face in many of these male-dominated industries.
And I love that part, Lisa, because a lot of us, and I come from a generation that's, you know, older than some of the other individuals out there, where they don't get as clearly as some of us who've been around a little longer the difficulty of breaking that glass ceiling, of being in a male-dominated field. And I remember a circumstance similar. I mean, it wasn't a pregnancy that I lost, but I was at a meeting with all men. And I was the only woman that was allowed at this meeting. And when I was contributing my opinions to the conversation, I literally had a man stand up, come over and pat me on the head and said, now, dear, you're a woman. You're just supposed to sit here and be pretty. We don't want to hear from you. So those kinds of situations, you know, are definitely situations that are still going on. They're, you know, those haven't gone away. They're still around. But also the fact that breaking in and being a warrior doesn't mean just in one area. There are warriors that can be in all kinds of areas of life. And women need to understand, especially, and this is, you know, one of the takeaways I got, you know, from reading your book, is that only you can decide what kind of a warrior you want to be. And only
right.
you can decide to stand up and be heard and to defend yourself and move forward. And one of the things that most women have a hard time with, because we're socialized this way, is be quiet, be pretty, and make everybody happy. And in the meantime, you make yourself unhappy. Do you agree with that?
Well, sure. And I think, you know, today's younger women, I think, have a really healthy kind of sense of boundaries. I think that most of the young women that I'm around or that I speak at in colleges or speak to at colleges really understand that it is outrageous for anybody to demean a woman in a work setting or in a school setting, or to call somebody honey or sweetheart. In fact, I did an investigation where I did an unscheduled interview, as we call them, or a confrontation, with the televangelist Kenneth Copeland. And that interview went viral all over the globe. Close to a billion people have seen clips from that. And one of the interesting things about people's reaction wasn't just that, you know, Kenneth Copeland comes off as a crazy, bananas, out of touch kook, but it's the misogyny that he displays throughout the interview, where he calls me honey and sweetheart and I love your eyes. Yes, that's pretty eyes. And so he's trying to kind of duck the questions by using misogyny. And a lot of young people picked that up, which I loved. So I think, you know, we're seeing that there is a shift. I think that more and more people are realizing that women belong in the boardroom, women belong in the, you know, executive suites, women belong in front of the camera and behind the camera. And so I think that we, you know, we're seeing progress. Absolutely. There is progress. But the reason I wrote my book is that there's not enough progress and it's not coming quickly enough.
I agree.
And we're going backwards.
Yeah. There was, and thank you for that. And, you know, I haven't known you as long as Michelle has known you, but in the time that I have known you, in the years that I've known you, one of the things that when I think I first got to meet you, when you were talking about going out and reporting on human trafficking, and you went to, I think it was Super Bowl, and, you know, did your investigative reporter and found out that Super Bowl was one of the largest venues for human trafficking. I have to tell you, I knew you were a warrior then, because if I didn't know it before, I knew then, because you are not afraid to get into the trenches, and you are not afraid. Well, let me rephrase that. You might be afraid, but you don't let that stop you from doing what you are so passionate about doing, which is identifying bad guys, getting bad guys caught, and having justice, you know, provided for those that the bad guys are perpetrating against. And I admire that. And to me, that sets you apart from many other reporters that are out there that don't want to get their hands dirty, so to speak. I want to go back to your book for just a minute, because as I was reading through it, there was a segment, a little portion in there where you mentioned something that I had to laugh at, because Michelle and I had just been talking the day before about how when she was a little girl, her mom had her sleeping in a dresser drawer. And then I read your book, and you also said you slept in a dresser drawer. So I said to Michelle, did you know that you and Lisa both have something in common, which is sleeping in a dresser drawer? And she goes, no. I said, well, you do. You're, you know.
And what else did I say? I said, well, over the years, I went from drawers to closets and came out. So there you go.
That's funny. Oh, my gosh. You did come out. Yay.
We did come out twice. We had that in common.
So
I just had to share that with you so you could chuckle along with us here. What else would you like the listeners to know about your book? And by the way, all of you need to go out and buy her book.
Definitely.
It's amazing. The honesty and the authenticity that Lisa has in her book is something that she doesn't sugarcoat anything. That's not who she is, but she tells her truth. She stands in her truth, and she is a warrior in her truth. And now that's me talking. Lisa, what would you like for the listeners, you know, to, you've described already a lot, but I would like you to say, what is this book for you in writing it? What is the takeaway overall, if you could sum up your book in a few sentences or a paragraph or whatever, what would that be?
there's somebody listening to us right now that is going through a challenge that makes them feel like they are alone, and they feel like they are not strong enough to fight back against something horrific that's happening in their lives. And I want them to read my book and to understand that all of us have an inner superhero. And there are ways, there are lessons, there are exercises you can do to become stronger and more brave every day. So in my book, I talk about, my book isn't just about me. My book is not about my stories. I use my life as a jumping off point to talk about bravery, and that I believe bravery comes from empathy, not audacity. I do not, you know, put on a gun and swagger around town to prove how tough I am. I don't chase bad guys on TV to prove that I'm a badass. I chase bad guys on TV in order to force accountability on behalf of the survivors and victims that tell me their stories. I believe that empathy is the driving force in what makes real superheroes go fight injustice. It's not about us wanting to be tough. It's about wanting us to help others. So I talk about that towards the end of my book, about how we can build empathy, and through empathy, we become more courageous and more brave on behalf of ourselves or others. So the takeaway in my book in that last couple chapters, I want you to read about the lessons towards becoming more brave and the exercises you can do every day, so that little by little, I believe bravery is like a muscle. The more you use it, the more courageous you become. And I want every single person listening, especially the person listening right this second who is facing a difficult challenge, I want you to know that you can be your own hero. You can be more brave, and you have the capacity to change your life's direction.
Wonderful. Anything else, Dr. Mathis?
No. Lisa, thank you so much again for all that you do, for who you are, for your book, and for being with us today. I am proud to be a sister warrior with you and, you know, support all the things that you do as well. And we were honored to have you be our guest today. And thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Dr. Kathy and Michelle.
Sorry about the technical difficulties again, but ultimately I want to say, you know, over the years, you're the real deal. You know, so many people in the spotlight do have egos. And as Quincy Jones always say, check your ego at the door. And you, my friend, you definitely make a difference, and you make media matter. I've seen it over and over again in the stories you tell, in the investigations you do, and ultimately with this book and seeing the book tour you're on and the media blitz going on with this book tour, you are saving more than one life, and I can guarantee that, because your story, as Deborah Norville said, your personal story is a roadmap for everyone who has big dreams and only needs to believe in themselves to achieve them. And you've done that, but you're sharing that story to make a difference. And I can't commend you enough. And we have appreciated our relationship with you for many years. You've emceed many of our conferences against trafficking, our No More Summit, our anti-violence conference, and you've been on our show, and you also served on our leadership council, and we can't say enough about you, and we will do whatever we can to praise you and all the other warriors out there by sharing your book and sharing this link.
Thank you so much, Michelle, and I hope to get up there this fall. I know you and I had talked about, you know, potentially visiting when I go up, hopefully, and speak to the Edward R. Murrow School of Communications at WSU, potentially. So if that happens, then we can see each other in person and maybe do some other event for your great cause as well.
Definitely, definitely. Well, we do appreciate it, Lisa, and we'll be in contact. And thank you, everyone, for listening. We will update this podcast and post the link. And our next podcast, we will be live at 3 o'clock today discussing financial abuse with another Lisa, our secretary of our board of directors, Lisa Brum. So stay tuned and join us at 3 o'clock later today. And until we meet again, thank you for being a spotlight for justice, everyone. And we hope to shine a light on the things that matter. Thank you so much. Thanks again, Lisa.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.